is the United States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford and this is episode 176. On the show this week, Lisa Goretta will bring us up to date with the latest USEF rule changes. And then Charlotte Bradall-Baker will be here to share tips on preparing for the show season. But first, as always, we'd like to remind you that the views of the guests and the host of this podcast do not necessarily reflect the views of the USDF or its members. And before we hear from our first guest this week, we have one item of news. Adrian Lyle and Salvino rode an error-free test to win the Grand Prix Special CDI 5-star event presented by Captive One Advisors on February 10th at the Adequan Global Dressage Festival. Lyle and the 11-year-old Salvino cruised to victory with a score of 75.319%, which represents a personal best score for this partnership. Olivia Legoy-Welts was placed second on her own Lenoir, a 14-year-old gelding by Denoir, and she scored 72.851%. And in third place was Arlene Tooney-Plage on Woodstock. The top three in the class represented a clean podium sweep for the USA in the fifth week of the AGDF at the Palm Beach International Equestrian Center in Wellington, Florida. And now to our first guest, Lisa Goretta, who is a USEF Large R Technical Delegate and co-chair of the U.S. Equestrian Dressage Sport Committee. And she's going to tell us about the latest U.S. equestrian rule changes that affect dressage competitors and judges alike. Lisa, welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much, Chris. Pleasure to be back.
And no, I know that we can rely on you to unpack the mysteries of the new rules. So over to you.
Okay, well, thank you. I thought for this particular segment, it would be a good idea to talk about some of the rules that may not have been discussed in depth prior because they are FEI rule changes or some changes that the U.S. Equestrian Board has put in for slightly earlier implementation than the standard a year ahead. So we'll start with those. First, I wanted to go over a couple of the FEI rule changes. The FEI rule changes are a little bit of an enigma because we know what they're planning the summer before, but then we don't always know what the FEI is going to do until they have their General Assembly in November. So that's why there's always that odd time of implementation of February 1st. So these are February 1st, so that was a few days ago. And a couple of them are for January 1st for rule changes that will have an impact on national dressage competitions. The first one is falls under the obligatory use of riding with two hands. There was a little bit of a controversy a bit ago about a rider who took one hand off the reins to get a little more crowd enthusiasm in freestyle, and another one who it was reported was trying to get a little extra impulsion in his Piaf and dressage tour by dropping one hand down and tapping the horse behind the saddle. So that has now been addressed, and it is obligatory to ride with both hands, except, of course, in freestyle when you are permitted to ride with one hand or for the mandatory salute. For those who are involved in either the FEI junior tests or the young horse tests, there's been a little change in the requirements for apparel, and it is now for FEI tests, for FEI junior tests, and also for the young horse tests. The dress code has been changed to a dark tailcoat or a dark jacket. Usually in the 5 and 6-year-old tests, we've seen a short coat. Now it is permitted for the 5, 6, and 7-year-old tests to ride with a tailcoat or a short jacket, and the same applies to the FEI junior tests. Let's see, now moving on, little change as we modernize the apparel for dressage. That's always a big controversy whether or not we should stay with tradition or loosen it a little bit. The FEI has decided again for the 2018 start that it is permissible for Grand Prix freestyle to not only have a single color tailcoat, but also a short jacket might also be allowed. One that has not been a big issue as far as I'm aware, but there is a change to the FEI rules and now for our national rules saying that it is compulsory to have a noseband or cavesson on your dressage bridle. So nothing has changed as far as the types that are permitted, but you must, in fact, have a noseband. The publishing of results, this is important for both competitors and for horse show management. It is a requirement when publishing the results and scores that you must include the raw score and the percentage. And if you are publishing freestyle results, that both the artistic and technical percentage scores be included in the published results. And for freestyle, it has long been a rule that you had 20 seconds of music that was permitted before you were required to enter the ring. The FEI has changed that to within 30 seconds of the music starting. And in order to not confuse competitors as they're working their way up the levels, nor the judges who are having to judge our freestyles, you will see in this year a change to reflect that on the USDF or national levels as well. So watch for that one. It is not in effect yet, but it will go in the springtime. So the change will be that the competitor must enter the ring within 30 seconds of the start of the music. And other than that, no change in musical requirements. Moving on, another equipment rule change that is a new division for us, really, in the FEI Children's Division, which corresponds roughly to first level tests. They have added for those new tests an equipment requirement that matches the young horse tests. And that is that snaffle bits that are used in the FEI Children's Test, this is in all competitions offering that class, the snaffle bit must be a minimum of 14 millimeters. That is important because there are some brands of bits in particular. Neue Schule comes to mind, and Mylar bit also comes to mind, that you need to check to make sure if you have a competitor in the FEI children's classes that the bit is in fact thick enough that might be checked on normal check of equipment after the competition. This was really a fairly quiet year for dressage changes within the U.S. equestrian. One of the big ones, and was discussed quite a bit prior to the January U.S. equestrian meeting, was a new rule that will take effect April 1st, and that involves the rule book and the detail that is included for each of the affiliates' judge licensing procedures. This is a first time that U.S. Equestrian has gone in this direction. Effective April 1st, that entire section out of the general rules will be moved to a new policies and procedures manual. So each affiliate, however they determine the qualifications for their judges, that section will come out of the rule book into a policies and procedures document that will be available on the U.S. Equestrian website. This is an attempt to make the rule book a little more dynamic and more of a living document, as those changes sometimes happen with different affiliates, particularly dressage with small R, large R, and S judges, that will allow the affiliates to make updates and improvements and clarifications to that section without having to go through the laborious rule change process. And eventually, it is hoped, it will make the rule book start to weigh a little under 8 pounds. I think that a couple of rules that are important to discuss that did not pass, but were often discussed quite a bit, too. One of them was a rule change proposal that would make it a rule violation to misrepresent a horse in horse sales. That drew a lot of discussion. And although the rule in its first presented form did not pass, I believe that that was considered to be a topic of sufficient importance to many, many U.S. Equestrian members across disciplines that I would expect that there will be discussion at the affiliate level about that, and I would expect to see that one come back. Another one that did not pass in its current form, but generated a lot of conversation, was a proposal to require those professionals who sign entry blanks as trainers to fulfill certain pre-obligatory steps in order to be able to do that at a licensed competition. There was a lot of discussion about safe sport training and background checks. That rule did not pass. However, again, that seems to be a topic that is on the minds of a lot of people across a lot of sports and disciplines. So I would expect to see that one coming back. So getting back to our division rules that will not take effect until December. So these went through the standard rule change process. So I will mention a few of those. One, starting in the competition season of 2019, which you know starts December 1st of 2018, there has been a minimum age established for horses that compete at fourth level. And that is a minimum age of 6 years, not terribly dramatic change, but as horses are going into the FEI, the feeling was that at the top of the national levels, minimum age of 6 was appropriate for the development and welfare of the horse. Also in effect for December, couple changes for judging. Only important if you are a dressage judge, but it is important because it's a growing affiliate, not ours, but related to some degree, and that is Western Dressage. Western Dressage has removed the ability of someone licensed as a dressage judge to judge Western Dressage. They have feel that they have developed their affiliate to the point where their judge training programs are ready to take on the responsibility. So if you are a licensed dressage judge or an L graduate and you're interested in judging Western Dressage, you must fulfill their judging requirements and have a Western Dressage license. Also, for dressage sport horse breeding judges, a class that you will not be able to go forward and judge anymore, the Andalusian sport horse category has decided that judges who are licensed only as dressage sport horse breeding judges, not dressage judges, will still be eligible, but dressage sport horse breeding judges singularly will no longer be eligible to judge those classes for Andalusians. So in closing this segment, Chris, I have covered some of the highlights. It is important to look periodically at the U.S. equestrian rule change, as sometimes there are clarifications that come forward that are implemented for shorter than the usual period, which is, again, the December 1st of 2018. The rule book is dynamic. It attempts to respond to the wishes of the equestrian sport. So best to be an informed competitor and make sure that you know the rules under which you compete.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much indeed for bringing us up to date, Lisa. Always good to have you on the show. Appreciate you taking the time.
Thanks so much, Chris.
And of course, importantly, all competitors and judges should ensure that they have the most current version of the USEF rules by visiting usef.org. And now, with the show season in mind, FEI four-star judge Charlotte Bredor-Baker is here to share a few tips on preparing your horse for showing.
I was entered in a show with two horses that really had very, very little show experience. One of them had no show experience, and the other one had, but a long time ago. So I really treated both of them like they had never been to a show. And one of the things that I believe very much in is actually practicing the test quite a bit. And I know a lot of people say, well, the horses will start anticipating, but you have to do it in a certain way where you have to change it up just a little bit. And for instance, coming into the halt, if you, let's say at any level, you're going to come down the center line to a halt, whether it's trot halt or canter halt. But instead of halting exactly at X, practice like you were going to halt at X, but then go maybe 10 more feet before you halt. And in the canter, where a horse really likes to stop before X, and you want to just keep going and pretend like you're going to halt, but more like canter in place instead. And then maybe do that a couple of times before you actually do the halt. And then when you do the halt, don't do it at X, do it past X. And then go on from there. And then, for instance, let's say you do a lengthening across the diagonal or an extension. Let's say you have a horse that wants to brace or not come back at the end of the lengthening, then practice a walk transition at the end so the horse, before you come to the corner, already knows he's going to come back, and he'll wait for you a little bit and come back easier. Of course, with horses that want to slow down too soon, you want to really ride him way into the corner before you come back. So it kind of depends on what the horse does and how he anticipates. All the lateral work, you don't have to worry about the horses anticipating between shoulder and haunches in and 10-meter circles and stuff. That's really not a problem. When it comes to flying changes, especially early on, you do have a good chance that the horse will be anticipating. And so there, you want to make sure you don't do the change exactly where it's prescribed when you're practicing a test. And let's say you're doing a half pass from the center line to the rail, which is in both third and fourth level, then do not do the change right after the half pass. Because if you practice it that way, then chances are you're not going to have a really good half pass because the horse is already going to be thinking flying change. So you're just going to keep going in counter canter and then do the flying change much later. And you're just going to stay in counter canter as long as it takes for the horse to relax and wait for you to give him the aid for the change. And if you always practice it like that, then when you're actually in the ring and doing it where you're supposed to, the horse is not going to be anticipating and you can get a nice relaxed change most of the time. Another area where a horse will almost always anticipate the flying change is if you're going across the diagonal in an extended canter and you have to come back at the end, there's a change at the end. So I do the same thing there. If I practice pre-St. George or I-1, instead of doing the change there, I practice extended canter and then really collecting the horse as much as I possibly can, but then don't do a change. So the horse is, instead of anticipating the flying change, he'll anticipate that you're really going to collect him. I shouldn't be speaking from a judge, but a lot of times when you see people riding that, you'll see a horse throwing in the flying change too early or not coming back at all before the flying change, no collection. But if you always practice that you're going to really collect them there and not doing a flying change until after you go through the corner, they won't anticipate, and you'll be able to really bring them back and then show a nice straight flying change before the corner. There are so many other places but mostly in the flying change is where the horses anticipate the most, I think. Again, with all the lateral work, you don't really have to worry about it, and you can ride through it just like it is in the test. You have a horse that anticipates an extended trot, you have a horse that's really strong, then don't start going until you get, for instance, 2X. So if that's a problem, then you just make the horses wait. Where the tempi changes are in the higher levels, if you have a horse that kind of takes over in them, then don't count when you go across like it is in the test. Then do maybe one change and then really collect the horse and make the horse wait, and then do another change and then make the horse wait before you do another one. So you don't get concerned with counting at all when you're practicing. And then when you do the actual count, maybe do it not as part of practicing the test. But other than that, I think you can really practice the majority of the test without any problems except for those points. Pirouettes, they will also sometimes anticipate sort of how they can get out of doing them. So what I'll do sometimes is, let's say I'm practicing right now, I have a horse I'm showing I-1. So at home, when I come across the short diagonal to get ready for the pirouette, instead of actually turning there where it's supposed to be, I just do some really, really collected steps, all the things I would do to prepare for the pirouette, but not necessarily do the pirouette. And then at other times, instead of doing a full pirouette there, on that short diagonal, I'll do a half a pirouette and then go on a few steps before I do the second half, because the horses can very quickly learn to kind of throw themselves around in the pirouette. So if you practice full pirouettes often, chances are you're going to have some problems in the test. And even at Grand Prix level, coming down the center line, I would not practice the full pirouettes. I practice usually two half pirouettes, and that makes them sort of wait for you in the middle and makes it a lot more rideable than when the horse knows it's going to go all the way around every time. So a lot of those things, you can make it so the horse is much more rideable in the show ring because he's not anticipating in those spots. But I do think it's very important to ride through the test quite a bit before the show. I think it gives the horses and the riders confidence that they know where they're going, and it's all work that they can very comfortably do. If you can't do it very comfortably at home, then you shouldn't be showing at that level, and then you need to look at showing at a lower level. Because if you can't do it well at home, for sure it's not going to get better in the show ring. So that doesn't make sense. And if you show at a level where the horse is not quite ready, then the horse will lose its confidence in the rider very quickly. So that doesn't really make any sense. Another thing that I've done, like with these two horses that I'm going to be showing here pretty quick, is trying to get them used to a little bit of show atmosphere. I have one horse of the two I'm showing. He can be quite spooky even at home. And so I've been setting up all sorts of things, scary things around the arena. I'm not so scary. But for instance, I wrapped a chair in tarp and put it at sea. And things like that. And you'd be amazed of how many horses will spook at that. Even the shows in this seasoned show horses, even some of my other horses would spook at that. I put up flowers on top of things and then found little reflectors that I put in that the sun would catch and then it would start spinning. I mean, kind of scary things. And then I put the sound system out there and played music and even had a PA system out there because that's another thing. Horses can be used to music and it's no problem at all, and then when suddenly somebody talks at a PA system or they drop the mic or something like that, that could be really scary for a horse. And actually with two of my horses that I knew were going to be more reactive to the sound, instead of actually being on them when I started the PA system, I actually had him in the stalls and just started talking to them from the outside of the stalls. And then it was like no big deal. And then when I was on him the next day, it was not a big deal. So there are just lots and lots of things you can do. The other thing I also recommend to people, instead of just start showing, is just take your horses to neighbors' places, especially with young horses. Just take them around town wherever you can go and ride. And that way, if you have any problems, it's much less stressful to deal with because you're not stressing about the show. You're not worrying about performing. You're just worrying about making it comfortable and secure for the horse. And so you're able to deal with problems much better. It's also good for the horses to go on little trailer rides like that where they're not going very far, so pretty soon they think it's no big deal to go places. I'm talking more about younger horses now. I also think it's a good idea for not only for the horses but also for less experienced riders is to just go and ride a test for your friend or your neighbor or somebody and then have somebody videotape you and then critique it yourself because, you know, most people, they may not be able to feel something, but they'll still be able to see it when you look at the video to some degree and or have your trainer critique it. I think it saves you a lot of money in the shooting if you do all of that in advance, and you're going to feel a lot more confident when you go to the show and feel really prepared. It makes the whole experience so much more fun and so much more, less stressful. If you know you're not going to have to worry about so many of those things and that you're used to going in and riding a test and the horse is used to going different places. Because otherwise showing can be, when you're first starting to show, can be really stressful and it should be fun.
And our thanks again to Charlotte Bradore Baker. And finally, a couple of notes before we leave you this week. The FEI has released a new intermediate A-B freestyle test. The score sheets are available at the FEI website, fei.org. And if you have any questions regarding eligibility, please contact US Equestrian. And we have an update on the regional championship owner membership requirement. Effective from 2018 regional championship program year, owners must have a USDF participating or business membership and a USEF membership, either junior active, senior active, life, or recorded farm with an active farm owner. And if the horse has more than one owner, at least one owner must have both an active USEF membership and an active USDF participating or business membership. For a business or farm to be the valid owner under this requirement, it must be listed as an owner of the horse with both the USEF and the USDF. And that's our show for this week. Our thanks again to our guests, Lisa Goretta and Charlotte Bredor-Baker. And as always, you can find notes accompanying this episode on the website at usdf.org. You can also keep up with the latest episodes by following us on social media at US Dressage Federation. And you'll find more educational resources and information at eTrack. And that's, of course, on the website at usdf.org. And if you're listening to the show on the website, you can also listen on your podcast player so that you can take the show with you. I'll be back in 2 weeks' time. Until then, thank you for listening. And remember, the USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.